Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Daniel Dickinson at the United Nations in New York. In this week's program, how a traditional craft is bringing hope to Afghan women, and the work of a doctor who helped treat rape victims is the focus of a new film screened at UN headquarters in New York. But first, the culture of denial and silence around sexual violence against women in conflict must be broken, according to a leading UN expert. Zainab Bangura, the UN Special Representative on Sexual Violence in Conflict, was the keynote speaker at a recent gathering in New York. The event was billed as an opportunity for Ms. Bangura to speak personally about her role as a champion for those people who have been sexually abused. Veronica Reeves has more.
In the meeting, Ms. Bangura said that for too long, victims of sexual violence were either forced to hide in the shadows or had their claims summarily dismissed.
Violence against women has traditionally been treated as a second-class crime against second-class citizens, which has led to a culture of denial. It's not happening. We don't treat our women like that. Silence and invisibility.
Ms. Bangura said leaders need to take an active role in protecting and rehabilitating victims so they no longer suffer in silence.
You need to break that silence. You need the countries where the crimes have been committed, for the leaders in those countries to take responsibility, to not only protect the women, to look after them.
The stigma attached with being a victim of sexual violence in conflict can be nearly as devastating as the crime itself, according to Ms. Bangura.
A lot of the women who go through sexual violence are thrown out by their community and their family. When I visited Mogadishu, 75% of the women who have been affected by sexual violence have been divorced by their husbands.
Ms. Bangura said that progress has been made on the issue since the adoption of Security Council Resolution 1325, which affirmed that women are disproportionately affected by conflict situations. Still, more work needed to be done on the long-term rehabilitation needs of victims.
Nothing is being done in terms of providing livelihood support to victims of sexual violence. So it's still a big problem. It's still absent. People are not ready to put in the money.
Ms. Bangura said that she is also working with countries to encourage them to put the needs of sexual violence victims into their poverty eradication plans as part of the new global development goals. Veronica Reeves, United Nations.
Rural women in Afghanistan's Bamyan province are using a traditional craft to weave a brighter future for their families. They're making rugs for which they receive a decent income. The money the women make is helping to lift their families out of poverty. And in the meantime, attitudes about women's value to the community are also changing. That's according to Connie Duckworth, a former investment banker and the founder and current CEO of Arzu Studio Hope. Arzu sells the women's rugs and provides them with access to literacy programs and healthcare services. Deanne Penn sat down with Ms. Duckworth to learn more about the project.
Arzu started in 2004 after an initial visit that I took, site visit, to Afghanistan immediately following the defeat of the Taliban. And when I saw the conditions of women there, I have a business background, and my view is that the initial way to empower women, the absolutely critical way, is to create jobs. So our premise is that peace is achieved through prosperity.
And now the word Arzu means hope. Your project, you know, delivers jobs, but I'm sure it also instills hope in the women that you work with.
Absolutely. Arzu does mean hope, and it's also a common woman's name, which is why we selected it, because it's an aspirational hope. And our jobs that we've created utilized a culturally acceptable local industry that happened to suffer from extreme exploitation of women, and that is the rug industry, the hand-knotted rug industry. After trafficking, that's one of the most exploitive industries in the world of women and children. So what we basically did was go in and disintermediate all of the middlemen who took all of the profit, and then we were able to push value to the weaver herself at the end of the supply chain. And because of that, then, our weavers earn substantially higher wages than previously. They earn 150% of what I would consider market rate. And it's that extra money that has allowed them to literally transform their lives by lifting their families from poverty through their earned income. The other advantage is that once a woman can earn her own income, What we have seen over the last decade is her status in the household rising. This is a gender-segregated society where women are often undervalued. She has more say over her children. And the most interesting part of this is that the cultural attitudes of her husband and men in the village have shifted.
Can you tell us about that? How have they shifted?
We recently did a study, and men used to say that women were only capable of doing housework and raising children. Today, we have husbands, whether they're 30-year-old husbands or 50-year-old husbands, and village leaders who are men, all say that they used to think that women had very limited skills. Now their wives are more educated than they are. They are earning a living that's supporting the entire multi-generational family group, and that they have aspirations for their own daughters, the men, to become teachers and doctors. A core part of Arzu's premise, and it's really one of our most innovative practices, is what we call our social contract. We negotiate this with male head of household. He's the guy that signs it. And what the obligations of the social contract are, to receive the high income, the family is required to do three things. Put all children, girls and boys, full-time in government school. Two, to release all women to literacy classes that Arzu has established in the village. And three, to allow women to be transported from their home in our vehicle with our chaperone to the clinic or hospital for pre- and postnatal care and babies for immunizations.
And Connie, you are one of the winners of the Innovation Challenge Award. What does this award mean for you and for the women of Arzu?
Well, on behalf of all of the women weavers and the Arzu team, we are absolutely thrilled and honored to have received this recognition. We have worked very diligently with great perseverance for many, many years. And so to now be recognized for the model that we have created, which we believe is, in effect, a very innovative model for global poverty alleviation, is a tremendous honor and thrill.
Connie Duckworth, CEO of Arzu Studio Hope, talking to Deanne Penn. The work of a gynecologist who treats victims of rape and sexual violence in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, is taking centre stage in a new film which has just been released. The Man Who Mends Women tells the story of Dr. Denis Mukwege. The doctor set up a clinic in eastern DRC to treat female rape victims in 1999. It's estimated he's treated some 30,000 women, some of whom had been subjected to horrific sexual violence. The film was shown at UN headquarters in New York. After the viewing, Joseph Umsami spoke with Janine Mabunda-Lyoko, the DRC's presidential advisor on sexual violence and child recruitment.
I think that being in this room with Dr. Mukwege after the film has been broadcast in DRC shows that there is a political will in DRC to change the narrative about the rape. And, you know, we came from a long way, a decade of war that we didn't want, came from a neighboring country, but it didn't prevent us to stay united. And instead of just blaming the others for the nightmare of the rape, we are just facing the reality and step by step, public authorities, civil society, NGOs, Dr. Mukwege and other wonderful women of my country who are not there tonight, we want just to say that women have the right to be dignified, and President Kabila, in appointing a special representative in charge of this matter, just want to say to the woman that it's time for peace and you need your right. Thank you.
Do you think the government is doing enough to protect the women in DRC?
I think that we have gone through many challenges, 10 years of war that we didn't want, 6 million of debt and collateral damage of rape is not the fault of the government, but it was the fault of war. So now that we are at peace, at least we try to address the issue. And the conviction of high-ranked general perpetrators of rape shows that we are not just seeing it, we are also doing it.
Janine Mabunda-Lyoko, the DRC's presidential advisor on sexual violence and child recruitment. You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. Thanks for listening today. I'm Daniel Dickinson.